And on our live line, we have got Mr. Afra Raymond. And Afra is a chartered surveyor and an activist, I must call him, because he's on the media quite a bit. Hello, Afra.
Hello, Vaughan. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty fine. And how is everything down there?
Well, things in Trinidad are very interesting. I mean, we have a state of emergency since the 21st of August for reasons that remain unclear, because it's a state of emergency with a partial curfew. In other words, it's only part of the country and only for part of the night. So it's probably the first state of emergency in the country's history that has been so partial.
Right.
I mean, we've had a couple of small ones, T.L.R. James in 1965. And,
right, I remember that.
And the Speaker of the House, the former Speaker of the House in 1995 with Mr. Manning.
Right.
But this is very unusual. And, of course, Monday's budget.
So it's a very awkward situation. I saw where the Minister of National Security had alluded to the fact that this was called to avoid a very criminal affair, you know, a bloodbath,
yeah,
and things like that.
Yeah.
From what you know, give us a sense of where the situation is, how it's developed.
Well, it's very difficult for me to comment in any detail on. Well, I live in Port of Spain and I work in Port of Spain and I travel to all the country. Because I just want to say that this is not one of my areas in which I'm an activist. I've spoken a couple of times in the media about it.
Right.
I have to say that broadly, there's a very mixed picture. Broadly, I have to say that most people seem to have accepted the state of emergency. That's my impression, okay? Most people, I figure a wide range of people in my daily life and the phone and personally and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, if that is what the government has to do to put up with crime, to catch up with crime, that's what has to happen. And it's a little bit, frankly, for me, my point of view is a little bit lamentable, having fought this far to entrench certain constitutional rights and certain advances our people have made, to have them dismissed at the stroke of a pen. And on what is really very flimsy reason, it's a little disappointing to see that lack of a public pushback, lack of a public response. To see that that is where the population of Trinidad and Tobago is. And that just goes to show how flexible our minds are.
Right.
That I guess you could say crime has terrorized people to the point that they would try anything. I suppose it's like a cancer vaccine. You would try any crackpot thing to get out, you know?
Right.
So it's really a very odd moment in the country's history. I don't think it's the right thing for them to have done, but that at this point in time, that seems to be a minority view.
Right.
You know, I have to be frank.
Right, yeah. Now, when we look at the situation, crime, there are different kinds of crime.
For example,
right now there's the Kilko affair that's taking place.
Crime of the century. I call that the crime of the century.
That's
the crime of the century.
But it looks like it's happening all over because it's happening. It's a problem that the U.S. is facing with Wall Street.
Yes.
And
yes,
we in the Caribbean are faced with Kiko. Jamaica is facing something else. But in Trinidad's case, I understand there were some hearings. There was a state of inquiry that took place.
Yes.
It might still be going on.
It's still going on, yes. I'm supposed to be the next witness for it. There's a commission of inquiry that's been established in Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah.
Under an Englishman called Sir Anthony Coleman QC, who was a judge, formerly British based. He was in Dubai and he was brought to Trinidad to do this commission of inquiry. And the commission of inquiry is into the collapse of CL Financial and the Hindu Credit Union.
Right.
And those are matters of enormous public concern because literally billions of dollars have gone missing. I mean, the last time the Minister of Finance spoke definitively on the subject,
uh-huh,
about a month, 6 weeks ago, he was estimating the total cost of the bailout in the order of $20 billion. Okay?
Yeah.
And that is a huge amount of money. I mean, Vaughan, let me give you a context for listeners who may not have been following this issue very closely.
Uh-huh.
You started off by relating the financial disaster with Wall Street and then the Jamaican situation with Trinidad and Tobago.
Right.
And listeners need to get an idea of how much worse this is in Trinidad and Tobago. Last year in December, the American Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, was questioned under oath by the Congress. And Timothy Geithner told the Congress, when they asked him, what is the bailout costing the taxpayer? He told them about 1%, a little less than 1% of GDP, gross domestic product. In other words, the output of all of America's assets based in America, the gross domestic product, 1%.
Right.
In the case of Trinidad and Tobago, when Mr. Duque got 13% of GDP, Trinidad and Tobago, and for the Eastern Caribbean states, which are far poorer than Trinidad and Tobago, because Trinidad and Tobago is a wealthy cousin, okay?
Right.
Eastern Caribbean states, the proportion is estimated to be 17% of GDP. So, to put all this in context now, if an economy is deep and as broad and with the sort of links and influence that it has, like America, could be destabilized with a 1% hit on their GDP. This, we in Trinidad and Tobago, because the entire resources of the society are being committed to a few people. And in fact, a vast amount of resources is being committed to sort out the affairs of about, it will shock you, one, about 8,000 people. This is far worse, okay? Yeah. And the depth of debate we need to have in society hasn't happened. And I'm happy that you gave me this opportunity to come on the program. You listeners who are interested, I actually have all this information, including my articles, my TV shows, and other radio shows,
right,
on my blog, which is afraraymond.com, www.afraraymond.com. Mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of other basic information on this stuff, central bank reports and so on, for those of you who may be studying this too.
If you're ever with me.
But why do you think this is so? The debate isn't there. I mean, why isn't it? Are we such a gullible people to, I mean, just rather to have...
That question is a very, very serious one. On the one hand, we have a decline, I would have to say, in the capacity for serious discussion. Because I hope I'm not being green-eyed when I say this. But I can remember when I was growing up, in the 70s and the 80s, when I was a little fella coming up. There was very serious discussion, debate, that were not always necessarily political. It wasn't always around an election, but you could have tuned into on TV, on radio, or if day. I think it's 30-something radio stations we have. Goodness knows how many internet channels and blogs we have.
Yeah.
I forget the number of TV channels. But everybody has a voice, and there's a tremendous cacophony. That kind of all that and a lot of bacchanal in the discussion. Because there's a phrase that people kick around the room, and of course it was the title of the best-selling book on the Wall Street Collapse, Too Big to Fail. There's this concept we kick around the room that an institution or a group of institutions can become so big
mm-hmm.
that the state can't allow them to fail. So they become reckless because they're going to get rescued. And what is interesting about the CL Financial thing is that they became so big that, in fact, just about everybody has had some connection with them. Every political party, yeah, every group, whether it's a group of professional accountants or the Association of Lawyers, every group has some connection with them.
Right.
And the silence is resounding. You see, that also has implications. That question about the size and in a small society,
right,
also has implications with respect to the whole concept in America that is accepted in America's commercial and financial landscape. There's a concept that's accepted almost as a given,
right,
antitrust,
yeah, yeah,
and monopoly laws. One of the big things coming out of America's commercial landscape in the first half of the 20th century was in fact the determination by the American lawmakers to break up trust and not to allow companies to set up these interlocking relationships that made them too big to control.
Right.
Yes? And they could dominate the political scene and the economic scene. And once a company got above a certain size, it was placed under a particular kind of scrutiny and was not allowed to grow beyond a certain size.
Right, right.
And there are examples across the whole of the economy in America. This program is only time and the place to go into that. But the point is, Trinidad and Tobago doesn't have those laws.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell you that at the time of the CL Financial Collapse, one, people's income from insurance premiums, that one company, there was a chart the central bank did, of 18 insurance companies, the top 18 insurance companies licensed in Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm.
And Clico alone was earning 75% of premiums. Okay?
Yeah.
So the other 17 firms are earning the other 25% of the premium.
Yeah.
So when a company is that big, the number of people who have money invested, the number of people working there, the number of people, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Once it gets in a problem, we all in a problem, even if we didn't buy a policy, because nobody will even speak out. There's a whole set of things that just tie into each other, as I say, a perfect storm.
Yeah.
And that is something we need to look at going forward.
Yeah.
And I say we, because I say the whole society, we need to look at whether we need to bring some sort of really serious laws to prevent that happening again.
Yeah.
Any one company in any one area getting that big, that in fact, it could have a terrible effect on the rest of the economy.
Yeah. But to do that, you must have good governance.
Absolutely.
And governance means there's a certain kind of fairness and objectivity one has or should take.
Absolutely. Those are indisputable points, you know. One, the lack of governance was really one of the criminal aspects that became clear. Listening to the testimony of Michael Caballo
in
the last session of the Commission of Inquiry. Of course, it's something I have been going into in my articles on my blog.
Yeah. No, my
one thing on live on TV, who was a participant of a company that was a major part of the CL financial empire.
Yes.
And he therefore knew what, to put it in gangster language, he knew where the bodies were buried. And he said he spoke about a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't think he spoke about everything.
Yeah.
And I think some more detailed questions will be asked of him in the next session.
Yeah.
But he keep a lot of information was put out there.
Yeah.
And what was very clear was that the company had no proper governance. You know, there were things like, and we've had shocking reports. The company, for example, Clico. Come on, I didn't speak about Clico, but I'll give an example about Clico one. Clico had a situation where for 3 years, none of their bank accounts was reconciled. Now, if you're running a company selling chicken and chips, or you're running a company offering, how could you be running a finance company telling people that trust us, we are the place to go to save your money for a pension, we are the place to go to for insurance, we are the place for investment, and you're not even reconciling your bank statements? That is recklessness and wanton mismanagement at a high level. They had no investment committee in Clico. No investment committee. That is complete recklessness again.
Yeah.
And to come back to your point about the state of emergency one and the whole question of crime,
right,
we have to recognize that those are criminal acts under the law in Trinidad and Tobago. Under R14, mismanagement, even if you as a director didn't steal any money, if you mismanage a company's affairs, that is a criminal offense under Section 91 of the Companies Act. So in fact, we need to recognize that crimes have been committed, and I certainly would keep on pressing that people need to be prosecuted under the process of law, of course. People need to be prosecuted and subjected to the laws.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, let's take a break here. I'm speaking with Mr. Afra Raymond. Afra is an activist. He's a broadcaster. He's a chartered surveyor. He lives in Trinidad and Tobago, and we've been talking about the whole Clico affair and the state of affairs. It's now 10 minutes before 9 o'clock or 8:50, and my guest is Mr. Afra Raymond, a Trinidadian, living in Port of Spain, and he's a chartered surveyor and an activist, communicator. And we are talking about the situation in Trinidad and Tobago. Of course, as you know, there is a limited state of emergency there. But beyond that, there are some things that's happening that's affecting the society. It's still, one may call it white-collar crime, which is an investigation and inquiry into the Clico, the Colonial Life Insurance Company's state of affairs. Afra?
Yes?
This thing has implications for the Caribbean, Barbados, you know, I'm seeing things happening in Barbados, you know, it's affecting people in Barbados and other places. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The owner's point of view. And without getting into complicated details, it offered the policy owners in Trinidad and Tobago, according to the Minister of Finance, about 92 cents to the dollar. I don't agree with that calculation, but he says it was 92 cents to the dollar. It was an improved offer. did last year in September.
Mm-hmm.
And to make the offer work, he has put two things in place. He's given himself, the Parliament has approved the power for the Minister of Finance to borrow $10.7 million in bonds. And this the central bank has now been immunized from legal challenge in this matter. And so far, there appears to be a level of satisfaction among Trinidad and Tobago's policyholders with this proposal that the Parliament approved. But I was looking online yesterday, and I saw there's a corresponding group in Barbados. You know, there's about six groups, okay?
Yes.
But there was a corresponding group in Barbados called, I think it's the BIPA, the Barbados Insurance Policyholders
Association
or something.
Right.
And, I mean, there's a lady called June Fowler, who's the main activist, and she and I talk occasionally. Right. And I was looking online, and they have launched a campaign, like in the last 48 hours,
yes,
saying to the government in Barbados, because then all sorts of shocking revelations are coming out about the links, the close links between the political class in Barbados and the people who ran CLICO. And they have had no offer at all for any recompense. So in fact, they have launched a campaign saying they don't want 75 cents, they don't want 90 cents, they don't want 95 cents, they want 100 cents on the dollar, and they want all the interest.
Right, right, right.
Which is in fact going to impose a tremendous amount of stress in Barbados, because from what we have been able to see at this end, a lot of these satellites of CLICO, because there was CLICO in Guyana, there was CLICO in Barbados, there was CLICO in British America and some of the Eastern Caribbean islands.
Right.
A lot of these satellite operations were hoovered. Money was pulled out of them to do a lot of projects in Europe and North America. So in fact, in terms of actual cash that's on the ground, there's very little cash. And in terms of actual assets, there's very little assets.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Right, right.
Now, the Eastern Caribbean Currency Union had declared British American bankrupt in the 2nd of November, 2009. And as part of their report to have the bankruptcy authorized by the court, because they applied to the court of the organization wound up, okay?
Right.
The accountants calculated that if they sold everything, all the assets that British American had, and try to apply the sale of all those assets to all the liabilities, people only get 10 cents on the dollar. That was how serious it was.
Yes.
I just used the phrase hoovering to describe sucking up money.
Right.
But it was 10 cents on the dollar. The money went somewhere else.
Right.
So people have been paying their premiums all the time, you see, maintaining their investments in good order, but the money is being taken out to do other plans. And it's that lack of governance, which is the phrase you used before we broke one.
Right.
That lack of governance is what can give rise to this situation. You can have a lack of governance and something beautiful come out of it, but that is very rare.
Right.
Good governance is an indispensable condition of having consistent good results, and insurance is a long-term business.
It's not
a wappy bet or a roll of the dice.
Right.
It's a long-term business. If you want long-term success in a challenging market, you need to have solid structures around you, and a lack of good governance can precipitate a crisis.
Yeah, I just wanted to share something that Ms. Fowler said. She said the alliance will support and join with, or if necessary, take itself whatever action is needed to pursue and recover every last dollar that is owed to the policyholders. And she recalled that when she formed the activist group in January, she declared that we did not want 50 cents on the dollar, 10 cents on the dollar, or no cents on the dollar.
Exactly.
We wanted everything that was owed to us, and that is the hard-earned dollars that were due to us, including the interest.
Mm-hmm.
So this is some serious situation.
So they're absolutely serious.
Yeah.
I know that they've been having meetings. I follow their stuff. I mean, I don't agree with the whole bailout thing in terms of policy or just getting back their money, but I'm following the issue, you see?
Right.
And I know that they've been having meetings. The meetings are well attended. They've got a tremendous amount of support in Barbados. And the situation there, unbelievably, in terms of accountability, lack of accountability, and the close link between the political class and the people who run CLICO is as bad as Trinidad and Tobago, if not a little worse. Because Trinidad and Tobago, this has really been a bad situation.
Yeah.
Even with this government that won the election last year in May, they and all have very close link to them.
Right.
CLICO, so it's a very, very murky situation in terms of how we're going to find our way out of this. It's very, very murky.
Mm.
No?
Yes, why? Well, a hot one, you know. Before we close, I'd like to play a clip by Errol Fabian, an artist, a comedian, on the state of emergency.
Why we still live in a state of emergency? I keep trying to figure it out. I've been thinking about it for a long time. Why are we still living under a state of emergency? The authorities have failed to identify any emergency for us. No clear justification. There was a talk of clear and present danger. It seems to me that the people in office are the danger. They're the threat to us, if you ask me. You know, the danger is unclear, and it seems that it is absent outside of what is being imposed on us. A state of emergency can be used to fight crime. Come on. The economy taking a lash, a lot of people suffering, a lot of families breaking up, a lot of businesses closing. And I'm not talking, I'm not speculating, I'm talking about things that I know are happening in our country. Come on. Stop the state of emergency. Stop the state of emergency while you still can and while you can still give yourself a chance. Try and save some kind of face. Madam Prime Minister, Mr. AG, Mr. Commissioner of Police, Mr. Minister of National Security, you have failed the public. You have failed us all. And you know what is abundantly clear to me now? I'm stuck. If a general election is called, who do we vote for? There was public consensus of opinion that the PNM wasn't saving us in a significant way, which is why there was an overwhelming response in the polls for change. Now this is what we get. This is what we get. Harassment and imprisonment. This is what we get. This is not the change we wanted. What's happening to our economy? This is not the change we wanted. So where do we turn? Who is going to help us? Where is this going to help? Where is this help going to come from? Where do we turn? But a good first step is to stop the state of emergency now. Please.
Yes, Errol Fabian. In the words of Errol Fabian.
One, that was a very good clip. I didn't hear it before, but I could say that for a government that has built a great part of its method, is built on communication and PR. They have really failed to communicate. What is the purpose of the state of emergency? We really do not know. You know, we really, if you talk, let me put it here this way, one. If you talk to five different government ministers, privately, you say, listen, why did you already do this? Each man will give you a different answer. The lack of a consensus is shocking. Even the Prime Minister and the AG, speaking within a few hours of each other, the launch of the commission of the state of emergency, had completely opposing explanations. Could you imagine that the two senior members of the cabinet had opposing explanations within hours of the launch? That is the confusion we're dealing in here. So, Errol, more power to you, brother. Vaughn, thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right,
listeners, afroraymond.com, tune in, send money.
All right. Well, you take.
Thank you, Vaughn.
All right, take care. Really staying on top of it.
You have a good evening, brother.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Afro Raymond, a chartered surveyor and an activist in Trinidad and Tobago, as he commented on the situation in Keiko, the colonial life insurance situation, and also the state of emergency that's happening in Port of Spain, in Trinidad and Tobago.